You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We begin a new week live right here on Football Full Circle on the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. I am Ben Stevens. It's a Monday here on Football Full Circle, FFC as it is known. And alongside for the ride is the mastermind of the pigskin, Joe Lisi, back in the saddle to start off this new week on Sports Grid Radio as well. Lisi, how was the weekend? What you been up to?
Oh, the weekend was fantastic, Ben, and it's amazing because there are other sports taking place outside of football, but Lisi always relates to the game of football, right? I'm watching the College World Series yesterday between Notre Dame and Tennessee. Tennessee getting knocked off as a 4.5-run favorite in that ball game in terms of the three-series game, right? I immediately think back to two of the best college football games I have ever witnessed in person, Ben. 1989, Rocket Ishmael in Neyland Stadium leads the comeback over Tennessee and Andy Kelly. And then in 1991, the miracle in South Bend, Notre Dame and Lou Holtz and Bettis with a huge first half lead. And here comes Andy Kelly, Carl Pickens, Aaron Hayden. They strike the upset with the upset win as a 6.5-point underdog, believe it or not, on the road in South Bend, 1991. Two of the best college games I have ever witnessed.
You see why I call him the mastermind of the pigskin, going to the late 80s, early 90s for two of the best college football games he has ever seen in person with his own two eyes, relating it to 2022 in the College Baseball World Series. A lot of fun poked at Tennessee yesterday, the top seed in the tournament in the entire country, losing before getting to the College World Series. A lot of people saying another disappointing postseason run for the Volunteers. Even myself, Joe Lisi, on Twitter, tweeting out a photo of the mustard on the field at Neyland Stadium, Rocky Top, the site of that great game against Ole Miss this year when the fans in Knoxville got a little bit rowdy and started throwing things down at the Rebs, and Lane Kiffin holding up a golf ball in his post-game interview. So like you, Joe Lisi, I also always relate things back to college football. Maybe we'll have some fun with the College World Series. It's my pride and joy. I started off my professional sports broadcasting career in Omaha, Nebraska, which is the site of the College World Series each and every year. And in my opinion, Lisi, it is the best sporting event you can go to live. 2 weeks of pure Americana. Beers, outside, beautiful weather, baseball. Nothing better than that. So maybe we'll look at the team still alive in the College World Series and what their prospects are like, not on the diamond, but maybe for the respective football programs moving forward in the 2022 season. Again, like you, Lisi, I relate everything to college football. My mind only thinks in college football. My mind now dreams in college football. Lisi, I had a dream last night. I was at Penn State, a Penn State game inside Beaver Stadium in Happy Valley for a whiteout game, but for some reason I was the only guy wearing navy, maybe because I'm wearing navy right now and was thinking about my wardrobe for this Monday morning, but I was wearing navy and they were heckling the crap out of me, rightfully so. And while it was an embarrassing moment in my subconscious, in the dream world, I'm dreaming of college football, Lisi. I need it in my life.
I'm with you. And who were they playing? Penn State, Michigan? Penn State, Michigan State? What was the whiteout? I need to know those details. What was the line in the game, Ben? That's what it's all about.
It's a great question, Lisi. I'm not sure if I remember who the opponent was. Obviously, a big game for a whiteout game, in which we look at Penn State's schedule quickly here. Penn State hosts Michigan this year, correct, Lisi?
Yep. They're on the road because they lost last year in the final 3 minutes. Remember,
right.
they gave up the touchdown. They lost that ball game, 17-14? They lost by three,
indeed.
Or they lost by four.
Okay, so Penn State hosts Ohio State in what we can sure to be a wideout game on the Saturday night of Halloween weekend. So now we go to the FanDuel Sportsbook and look for the early line here, Joe, of that game. And thus we will see what game I was dreaming of and what the line was for that football game. All right, bear with me here as I type this in quickly. By the way, Penn State now a 3-point favorite against Purdue that opening weekend of the year. Penn State and Ohio State, the Nittany Lions, Joe, nearly catching two touchdowns at home for that whiteout game of my dreams, a 13-point underdog against the Buckeyes on Saturday, October 29th.
Now think about this with Jahan Dotson, Sean Clifford, and coming off that loss to Illinois in the 9 overtimes, they were basically an 18.5, 19-point dog and went toe-to-toe with C.J. Stroud and the crew. They lost that ball game by 10 points. So now you fast forward a year later, no Jahan Dotson. Now your Parker Washington is there, but Clifford comes back. They're catching basically 13 points. I got to be honest with you. At home in Happy Valley, I would take the points in that matchup. I think James Franklin at least will cover that ball game against Ryan Day and the crew.
And they did last year, an 18.5-point underdog against Ohio State, only losing that game by 9, part of Penn State's 5 losses in the Big Ten last year, Joe. But as we've detailed, they lost every one of those games by only single digits, an average margin of defeat within conference play in their 5 losses of just about 4.2 points per game. It's why I'm a little bit high in optimism on the Nittany Lions this year. 18 win total of 8.5 and the over at plus money right now at plus 110. 2020 was a weird year for Penn State. 2021, not a great year, just 7-6 for James Franklin and the Nittany Lions. But in the 3 of 4 years previous to those 2 years, Lisey, at least 11 wins for Penn State in all 3 of those campaigns. Joe, we were supposed to start off talking NFL football, and here we go on a tangent about college football. We'll have to do that as we get next. The NFL headlines around the league as mandatory minicamp rolls on. Stay with us on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We are back on Football Full Circle, live right here on a Monday to start off this new week. The Sports Grid Radio Network, Sirius XM Channel 159. He is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. And now we dive through some of the headlines as it pertains to mandatory minicamp across the National Football League getting underway for a few teams. And in that DMV area, Joe, Baltimore, Maryland, a big topic of conversation this offseason from a quarterback perspective. For the first time in his career in the National Football League as the quarterback of the Baltimore Ravens, Lamar Jackson did not partake in voluntary OTAs. But good news for the flock, Lamar Jackson at the team facilities today, first time back with the Baltimore organization this offseason, undergoing his physical to get ready for the 3-day mandatory minicamp that follows the rest of this week. Joe, are you concerned at all by the ongoing contract talks between Lamar Jackson, who is representing himself trying to get that extension off his rookie deal, and the Ravens front office?
Yeah, I'm somewhat concerned. I'm more concerned, too, the fact that he lost Marquise Brown. And in order to gain, obviously, consistency in the passing game, he needs the quarterback to wide receiver relationship with those young guns, right? He needs to establish that early on. So the fact that he didn't go to, let's say, you know, OTAs in the offseason and now he's just stepping foot on the football field in June is a cause of concern. Is he fully invested in this season? Obviously, they're a front runner to win the division at 2-1 with Cleveland. You want and need him in that offense, and more importantly, you need him to be in rhythm early on. This is not an easy division, and if we're looking at it as a whole right now, the one concern about Lamar Jackson in terms of his game is that if you keep him in the pocket and he's trailing or they're at a double-digit deficit, can Lamar lead his team back in order to pull out a playoff win? That, to this point, we haven't seen against elite competition, and that's still a concern. And now you throw on the contract in the final year. I wouldn't back Baltimore just blindly because he's back in camp right now, Ben.
I am still very high on a healthy Lamar Jackson. I think what he presents at the quarterback position is so unique at this level of the sport that I think he can win you multiple football games just by his own self and his own person being out there at the quarterback spot. But that's if he remains healthy, which was a struggle last year for Lamar Jackson. And as we get ready for this year, losing Marquise Brown is something that I think we'll see how much it rears its ugly head is what I'm getting at here, because we know that throughout most of the first couple of seasons of Lamar Jackson's career, he hasn't had that true number one wide receiver. In fact, his favorite target really has been his tight end in Mark Andrews, but it's made the pass game at times one-dimensional. And now the Ravens have such an interesting and creative and unique ground game that utilizes Lamar and all of the backs they have in Baltimore, now with J.K. Dobbins, an incredible athlete out of the backfield, and what they are allowed to do there, that I think the Ravens still obviously find their success in their offensive game plan that is built around having Lamar Jackson as their quarterback. I'm still very high and optimistic on Rashad Bateman when he stays healthy now entering year number two, but I think losing Hollywood Brown, who's also Lamar's best friend on the team, will be something to monitor throughout this year. But I think where the Ravens make their biggest stride and their biggest upgrade this offseason is in the defensive secondary, ravaged by injuries last year, but got so much better in this offseason. Marcus Williams comes over from New Orleans. You add Kyle Hamilton in the first round of the draft. Baltimore drafted so well, as they often do each and every year. You had Adolphe Owe last year in his rookie campaign, harassing quarterbacks in the backfield. I think defensively, Baltimore certainly has it, and I think I'm not overly concerned by what is happening right now with Lamar in his contract negotiations with Baltimore. I think he deserves to be paid. I think he will. And Joe, we've seen that movement in the AFC North market now, where the Ravens are plus 160 as the favorites. The Bengals are 40 cents behind with the second best price at plus 200. And obviously, with the ongoing off the field lawsuits and all that is compiling against Deshaun Watson, the Browns move back to the third best odds at plus 270. The off the field matters, meaning a lot more than what is happening on the field for Cleveland right now, but we see that move in the market. So the Ravens are now the favorites to win the AFC North. And Joe, I still say, though, as we have discussed often here, that the Bengals have the value, and although they don't have that shortest price right now, and they've actually gone down by 10 cents to plus 200, I still believe that Cincy has the value in that division.
I'm with you, and a couple of things. We warned players, right, and gamblers throughout the offseason, don't bet on Cleveland at 2-1. There's no value in that bet, right? And sure right. enough, here we are, and we said it about a week ago. We brought it up. When would the books readjust and get concerned about the off-the-field issues surrounding Deshaun Watson? Well, here we are, because we went from plus 200 to now plus 270. How do you think the people that now tied up their money for basically 8 months, 9 months, feel if they put down money on Cleveland thinking this was in the rear view mirror, and now you could have gotten better odds just maybe a month later? So, you know, it does pay to be patient and wait. And secondly, I'm with you in terms of Cincinnati, and I could take it a step further as we correlate it to maybe Baltimore and Lamar Jackson. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. John Harbaugh and that defensive staff have done a fantastic job year after year of just reloading, finding diamonds in the rough on the defensive side of the ball, right? They did it a couple of years ago with the LSU linebacker Queen that came out, right, in terms of the national championship. They took him out, Patrick Queen. Well, same thing in terms of this type of situation with Kyle Hamilton. He fell to a certain level. He upgrades that secondary, and they're going to be fine there. But I think when you look at the overall market and you look at the division as a whole, the only battle-tested quarterback in the division right now is the Super Bowl appearance in Joe Burrow in Cincinnati. He's the one with the most experience entering 2022, and he potentially has two of the best or three of the best wide receivers in the division, Tyler Boyd, Higgins, and you got Ja'Marr Chase. What does Lamar have in comparison to that? He's got Tylan Wallace, who's basically up until this point unproven, and Rashad Bateman. So how can you say, okay, you know what, I feel comfortable because the defense is good. In order to back Baltimore, I need everything to go their way, meaning, you know, they need to run the football. If you throw that out of the window, and I've been the biggest backer of Lamar, I still think there's question marks there, whereas Burrow and Cincinnati have the least entering this season.
Both Baltimore and Cincinnati have a team win total that stands at 9.5. The Ravens, a slight bit more juice to the over at -130. It's even juice, -110 for both the over and under of that 9.5 win total for the Bengals. And I think Joe brings up a great point. We talk about the contract extension and the talks here for Lamar as he tries to represent himself in terms of securing that second contract in the NFL following his rookie deal. He will get paid. He should get his, no doubt about it. But if these continue to drag on through the summer months, and we get to a point like which we often see, Joe, where contract extensions reach too far of a point where a team and a player decide, all right, let's shut this down and we'll get back to it after the season is done, that's when there might be a little bit more concern, because then you have that hanging over a player entering the year. I think something will get done ahead of this season getting underway, maybe even before training camp for Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, but as it continues to drag on, as the process plays itself out, the timeline is what might turn to be concerning for Baltimore and Lamar.
Absolutely. And keep in mind as well is that if they don't sign a deal and he plays, due to the fact of the way he plays, running the football and being athletic, if he tweaks something or gets hurt, what happens in that type of situation for Lamar? Does he say, you know what, I don't have a contract yet, I'm going to sit out two or three games? You know why? Because now my body means more to me at this point in the season until we re-up than to lead the team to a potential playoff appearance. That's the concern that you run with without signing them for the through the fifth year right now.
Only 12 games played last year out of the 17 for Baltimore as he dealt with some of those injuries, 15 each in the two previous seasons. Of course, an MVP season in 2019, just his second year in the league. We'll continue going around the National Football League with some news and notes you need to know up next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We return on Football Full Circle on this Monday, live right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. The mastermind of the pigskin, Joe Lisi, is here, and I am Ben Stevens. So, Joe, we're going around the NFL. Mandatory minicamp continuing this week for other NFL franchises. We focused on Baltimore, part of the DMV. Lamar Jackson back with the Ravens organization for the first time this offseason, missing voluntary OTAs, but seems as though he is reporting undergoing his physical ahead of mandatory minicamp for the flock this week. However, in the D.C., Virginia area, the Washington Commanders will most likely be without their star receiver in Terry McLaurin. Sources telling ESPN that Terry McLaurin will miss this week's mandatory minicamp as he looks for a second deal in the NFL with the final year of his rookie contract coming to a close here very soon as well. And Joe, we heard about this in the offseason, that three young wide receivers were all taking a similar stance in looking for big money they had seen around the offseason paid out to wide receivers like Devontae Adams' new deal with Las Vegas, Tyreek Hill, and all he got heading to Miami, even Christian Kirk and free agency going to Jacksonville and getting paid. That A.J. Brown, who's now in the Eagles and did get paid. Deebo Samuel for the Niners, still in some contract mishaps there, although Deebo was at mandatory minicamp last week, reportedly. And now Terry McLaurin, all looking for a new deal. But Terry McLaurin, Joe, it seems will miss this week's mandatory minicamp for the Washington Commanders. To me, that's pretty concerning moving forward.
It is. And now they drafted Jahan Dotson, that I absolutely love, from Penn State, but they have a new quarterback in Carson Wentz, right? Again, yep. Quarterback to wide receiver relationship. The one thing that Wentz struggled with is building that in Indianapolis, what Michael Pittman and obviously all of those wide receivers there. So at the end of the day, if this team is going to get back to winning a division title, they need Terry McLaurin there. He's the most consistent wide receiver in that offense. You have Logan Thomas coming off the ACL injury. I love Cam Sims in a big time spot. He seems to step up, but McLaurin's the guy. He's the speedster, right? He's the one that is the best pure route runner on that team. And if he's not happy, what does that mean? Now, Here's the problem, though. What is the identity of the Washington football team now? Are they still a ground-and-pound type of offense with Antonio Gibson and those running backs? They still have McKissick? Or are they going to try and open it up with Carson Wentz and those playmakers, including McLaurin, if he's involved? What is the identity? Because that is the biggest concern for me. If I'm Terry McLaurin and I'm buying into this team right now, obviously I want to get back to the playoffs, but I want to get my numbers and I want to eat. Is Carson Wentz the guy number one? And are they going to all of a sudden evolve from an offensive philosophy perspective to really increase my numbers and then make me the guy in this offense? Because up until this point, I haven't seen that yet.
Since heading to the NFL from Ohio State, Terry McLaurin has been sensational, even playing with some spotty quarterbacks throughout his time in Washington. His rookie campaign in 2019, 919 yards, had 7 receiving touchdowns, only played in 14 games. He has started every game he has played for Washington in his career, including last year, all 17, 77 receptions, 1,053 receiving yards in total with 5 touchdowns. It was even better a year ago, Joe, in 2020, or 2 years ago now, 87 grabs for 1,118 yards and 4 receiving touchdowns. Terry McLaurin has been a staple of this wide receivers core, maybe one of the people often overlooked because you're like, all right, who's tossing him the pigskin? Taylor Heinicke? All right, maybe we'll see how that goes. Ryan Fitzpatrick, for a little bit of time, and now Carson Wentz. I don't, Joe, as you know, have any belief in Carson Wentz at this stage of his career. I cannot back a quarterback that is a 15-point road favorite, needed just to win the game outright, and lost on his way trying to make the postseason to the Jacksonville Jaguars last year. So I'm not optimistic about this Washington team, and I'm not sure Terry McLaurin is, because right now he does not seem like he will attend mandatory minicamp, which is always interesting, Joe, because as contract extensions and those conversations are coming to a head and there might be a dispute and maybe the sides haven't been in that great of communication, whatever it may be, mandatory minicamp is a big sign of that last step of the offseason before breaking for summer months and then coming back for training camp, because it is mandatory. You are fined if you are not there. How big of a fine, that depends on where you are within your organization, but it can get close to 6 figures, Joe. So that's a substantial amount of money for a lot of these guys seeking that second contract or a new and bigger contract. So when they're giving that up to miss a couple of days of practice, it is slightly concerning moving forward.
It is, Ben, and I'll take it a step further, is that, you know, obviously the concern about the quarterback situation, you mentioned basically pedestrian, middle-of-the-road quarterbacks, including Carson Wentz, and I bring it back to Ron Rivera as a whole, that this situation is sort of eerily similar to his last stint in Carolina. Gets the team to a Super Bowl appearance, loses to Peyton Manning, and then all of a sudden you start to see regression. Now, it was a great feel-good story, and thankfully Ron Rivera beat cancer and led his team to a division title a couple of years ago at 7-9. They were the best and more consistent defense at that particular time, but he hasn't elevated the team to the next level, right? And now Chase Young is coming off an ACL injury. We saw the defense, the staple and the foundation of that team a couple of years ago, regress. So what do we have in 2022? That's why I bring it back to Rivera, in the sense of he really needs to take the next step now. You have younger players there. Chase Young is as a young, dominant player. Terry McLaurin, a young, dominant player. Logan Thomas, when he's healthy, is a great tight end. Not elite, but still a great tight end with physical attributes. Antonio Gibson, a very good running back. So what is the concern? What is the peak for this team? Can they get to 10, 11 wins with Carson Wentz? I don't know, because I still think Ron Rivera is a very conservative coach, and I think that's where this team gets handcuffed, and that'll hurt McLaurin because they don't utilize him correctly. In a situation, Ron Rivera would much rather run the football and just sort of grind it out than as opposed to just opening it up and airing it out with those playmakers that he has there.
If you're using conservative approach to describe a guy once known as Riverboat Ron, that's not a great thing for the future of the Washington Commanders, who, Joe, I think you bring up a sensational point. What is the identity
of the Commanders when they won a terrible NFC East to make the postseason in 2020 and then gave the Buccaneers and Tom Brady all they could handle in that opening wild card game with Taylor Heineke as their quarterback. It was the defense. Top five in the league in both scoring and total defense in the 2020 season. Last year, scoring defense ranked eighth worst in the National Football League. Total defense, 11th worst, giving up more than 359 yards per game. So if you're looking for improvement for Washington, I'm not sure it really falls on Terry McLaurin or Carson Wentz. The defense needs to be a lot better because I think there is a certain ceiling for this offensive production, and the defense will need to keep them within striking distance for a lot of these games. But, Joe, they play in the NFC East. It is not the most difficult division. Their team win total is 8.5 for the Commanders. The juice is on the under at minus 170, and rather substantially so, but there's been some arguments, Joe, that maybe Washington presents some value in the NFC East, given how up in the air we expect it to be at plus 450. What do you say to that idea of value on the Commanders?
I could see it to a degree. I'm conflicted. Yeah. You know why? Because I like individual players like McLaurin, like Thomas, like Gibson, like Cam Sims, but I'm not sold on the main components of this team, which is Ron Rivera and Carson Wentz, which we know in the NFL, if you don't have an above-average quarterback, you're not going to win football games unless the defense is elite and off the hook, and we didn't see that last year. So now I'm conflicted, saying the identity is lost, right? And I'm not going to bet thinking that they all of a sudden bounce back. I have to go off of what I saw and where we are right now, right? And I'm going to say under. I really think under. I think right now Philadelphia has more momentum, has upgraded considerably better than Washington. And until those questions are answered with Chase Young and, more importantly, Carson Wentz, I can't buy in at this point.
Joe, we've talked a lot about Warren Sharp and his strength of schedule metrics using projected win totals and the opponents that you will face in 2022. I like that model better than looking at strength of schedule based on a team's performance last year in 2021. You can take the smart algorithms and numbers and put that to prediction for the teams you will actually play based on what they are expected or hoped to do in 2022. And we talk about the NFC East here and how this division gives you an opportunity, maybe to make a run. We know that no team has won this division in consecutive seasons for quite some time, nearly two decades now, it feels like. And when you look at the strength of schedule, all four teams in the NFC East, according to Warren Sharp's numbers, are four teams that rank in the top 10 in terms of easiest schedules in the league. The Giants have the easiest schedule, according to Warren Sharp's numbers. The Eagles, the second easiest schedule. Washington's there with the sixth easiest slate. And then Dallas rounds out the top 10 with the 10th easiest schedule. So thus, you look at Washington, and maybe there's an opportunity to go over that win total of 8.5 and cash a big plus money ticket. But Joe, I agree with you. Unless the defense is elite, ranking in the top five in both categories as they did 2 years ago, I'm not sure this is an above 500 football team because you have those limitations, in my opinion, with Carson Wentz as your signal caller.
Yeah, and think about the only two proven quarterbacks to this point, and what I mean is leading the team to the playoffs are Dak Prescott and Jalen Hurts, and those are the only two I could buy into at this point in the season.
And it's interesting that we say the proven commodity of Jalen Hurts because I think he has a lot to show here in his third year in the NFL with all the tools he has now offensively. When you add in guys like A.J. Brown to Devontae Smith and, of course, Miles Sanders in the backfield, this is the year, and that's why I'm big on Philly plus 210 in the NFC East at this moment. We come back up next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Joe, as the kids would say, don't let those boys get hot. And that's what we're about to do right now here on Football Full Circle on this Monday, live on the Sports Grid Radio Network in Sirius XM Channel 159. He is the man known as the mastermind of the pigskin. He is Joe Lisi, especially when it pertains to college football. I am Ben Stevens. We started off the show, Joe, going on a tangent. We were going to start with the NFL news and notes you needed to know heading into mandatory minicamp week, an update on Lamar Jackson's contract extension talks and whether he would be available at minicamp for the Ravens, and the same for Terry McLaurin. And then all of a sudden, Joe, we bring up college football for 1 second. We get lost for 6 minutes in a great conversation about where Penn State's value is come week 8 of the college football year to end out October. That's what we do so well. So we're going to use an excuse right now to talk college football with what is happening in college baseball in the College World Series in the CWS. 6 of the 8 spots of what is known as the Omaha 8 for the College World Series have been booked based on Super Regional Sunday. But Joe, we still have 2 more spots available that will be decided on this Super Regional Monday out on the West Coast. The number 2 national seed in Stanford hosting the Huskies of UConn, those pesky Huskies that have made their way to this Super Regional site, forcing a winner take all game 3. And then also a little bit further north in Corvallis, Oregon, the Oregon State Beavers, the number 3 overall national seed, hosting the, I'm blanking on the name, the Auburn Tigers, who are the number 14 national seed. So, Joe, we're going to look at some of these teams still in the hunt for a College World Series championship and maybe parlay that into what their football programs can expect in the 2022 college football campaign. And, Joe, as we saw yesterday, one of the biggest upsets we have seen in the history of college baseball. Tennessee, after a thoroughly dominant regular season, the top overall seed in the NCAA baseball tournament, but suffering, Joe, a familiar defeat, as many have seen, as the top overall seed in their hunt for a College World Series. Tennessee now going down, upset by Notre Dame yesterday. There has only been one top overall seed in the history of this tournament to win the entire thing, and that was Miami back in 1999. So not really a great thing to be the top national seed by the time we get to the hunt for the College World Series in a spot in Omaha. But that's got to be good for Notre Dame, right? Link Jarrett, the head coach of the Irish, maybe Marcus Freeman taking in some of that good juju as he gets ready for his debut year as the real head coach of Notre Dame football. Can they build off that enthusiasm, Joe, within the athletic department?
I think they can. And Marcus Freeman, if you follow his Twitter, he's buying into the program as a whole. He's at hockey games. Yep. He's buying in. We're moving on to Omaha. He tweeted that out yesterday. So he's all in terms of the program. And that's what you want to see in terms of the support for other programs within your organization or school. Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame are doing that. I have to admit, I think it's, you know, their win total this year is 8.5. Yep. I got to be honest. I don't know. I know from a baseball perspective, I think Notre Dame is playing with house money. So for the College World Series, I would back them. I mean, especially big hits in big games. They got a 2-run blast and then a solo blast in the 8th that really changed the landscape of that game in Knoxville. So I'm buying into Notre Dame. I'm rolling with them in terms of the World Series. However, when it comes to the football side of things, you know, Marcus Freeman, great D coordinator, a lot of pressure to get and follow up Brian Kelly, a coach that took this team to 2 college football playoff appearances over the last 5 years, and you start out playing Ryan Day and C.J. Stroud on September 3rd. It's not easy. So I'm going to say I think they're an 8-win football team in 2022, Ben.
It'll be very interesting, Joe, to see where they go. 8.5. Is that win total? So Joe's going under. That would be the plus money right now, plus 120. The over has the juice at minus 140. Of course, Notre Dame, an independent, plays a very competitive schedule throughout the year. They start off at Ohio State, where they find themselves with the line working even more in favor of the Buckeyes, Joe. It was at 13 earlier this offseason. Now it stands at 14 in favor of Ohio State, a full 2 touchdowns, backing Ryan Day and the Buckeyes at home inside the Shoe in Columbus, Ohio. And as it goes for Notre Dame's schedule, like, it's really not
incredibly difficult, Joe. And Mark Zeno was on the morning after, one of the faces you will see and hear around Sports Grid. He was on the morning after a couple of weeks ago. And for Notre Dame, Joe, in one of your favorite markets, to be a team to win 10 games, their team win total again is 8.5. The over has the juice at minus 140. So to get to double digits in Marcus Freeman's first full year as the head coach is plus 200. And as you look and go up and down the schedule, Lisi, they go at North Carolina week number 4. They have Cal week 3. They have Marshall week 2. Maybe they don't beat Ohio State. Maybe they don't even cover a 2-touchdown spread. But to start off 3-1 would not be shocking by any means. Then they have a bye week. Then they have BYU. Then they have Stanford. They have UNLV. They go on the road to my alma mater to take on Syracuse. Their toughest test is early November against Clemson, but that game at least is in South Bend before finishing with Navy, BC, and then finally what will be a great game, at least we hope, Joe, on the road at the Memorial Coliseum in Los Angeles taking on USC. But I think when I look at this right here, Joe, I would probably give them 9 wins, and I think there's a chance for Notre Dame to get to 10 wins. I know that I believe in Marcus Freeman, like his entire program believes in Marcus Freeman, and you saw that response when he was named head coach last year after Brian Kelly pulled the rug out from under them and went to Baton Rouge.
Yeah, without a doubt, he's going to be a great head coach. I think the problem or the concern, if you're looking at a win total in terms of Marcus Freeman year one, the expectation bar is so high, right? This team was 11-1 last year, so the drop-off, you know, there's going to be slight regression. He's not the same type of coach as Brian Kelly. Doesn't have the same experience. There's going to be a learning curve. Now, is it 8? Is it 9? Will the Notre Dame fans and boosters and faithful go through a couple of years of 8-4, 9-3, respectively, and allow Marcus Freeman to get, you know, under his ground? Because at the end of the day, I mean, expecting him to go 12-0 or 11-1 in year one with his first year as a head coach is ridiculous without any head coaching experience. Now, and on top of that, there's no experience at the quarterback position, so it's not
a smooth transition,
right? Here's the thing. I will just say this. Three toughest games, obviously, like you mentioned, Ohio State, Clemson, USC, obviously on the road with Lincoln Riley. Clemson, they defeated last year with Brian Kelly, right? Or the COVID year where they knock off DJU and the crew. But here's the concern. The concern for me is this. BYU is not easy with Jaren Hall, right? Nope. Kalani Sitake, they're a mature type of team. And Jakovic and Boston College as well typically plays Notre Dame very tough. I will just say this if we're looking at the spread perspective. The line went up in week one from 13 to 14. Yes, I believe Ohio State is the superior team. However, from the betting perspective, week one, we are giving Marcus Freeman, a defensive-minded head coach, 6 months to come up with a defensive scheme and game plan to prepare for C.J. Stroud and Ryan Day. So even though they might lose, I might personally look to the 2-touchdown underdog in week number one, because if you're not going to get it week one, you're not going to get it the rest of the year. And I'd rather take a coach with 6 months of prep versus 1 week of prep going up against Ohio State in that offense.
It should probably speak to how good Ohio State is expected to be this year that they are a 2-touchdown favorite in their opening game of the year against Ohio State, because Notre Dame has 6 odds listed right now for 6 of their 12 games in this college football campaign. They are the underdog in half of them against Ohio State to begin, then against Clemson, and then against USC to end the year. But the spread against Clemson, Joe, and yes, it is in South Bend versus being on the road in Columbus that opening weekend of the year, but the spread in South Bend, Notre Dame is only getting 3 points at home against Clemson, who has the 4th best odds to win a national championship, just 1 spot behind Ohio State at this moment. And then they're getting 2.5, Joe, on the road against USC, that final game at the Memorial Coliseum in LA. So compare that. Field goal spreads against USC and Clemson, who we expect, at least based on the odds, Joe, the 4th and 5th best prices to win a national championship, and a 14-point underdog against Ohio State. To me, that says more about the Buckeyes than I think it does about the Fighting Irish, but it's interesting when you put those all into comparison against teams, Joe, that we expect to all factor into the race for a spot in the college football playoff.
Yeah, great point, Ben. And I think it shows that Ohio State is the most complete team out of all of those teams. And the reason why I believe that is if you go to Clemson, yes, dominant defense. That carried them in the second half of the year. They were able to run the football more consistently with the offensive line. That was the biggest thing. If you want to know Clemson as a whole, what happened with DJU and the crew, the running game over the last couple of years. It was a transition. When they had Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne, they were a balanced offense with Tony Elliott and Jeff Scott co-coordinators. They ran and passed for over 200. They actually ran for 240 per game. After Scott moved on, they dipped down to a buck 65. Then they were a buck 60 for much of the year last year. So that offense looks different. All of a sudden, you're in long third down situations. So that's where Notre Dame has the advantage. We don't know. There's no speed on the perimeter anymore for Clemson. We saw that last year. They lost to Pittsburgh because of the lack of consistency in the passing game, right? So that's why Notre Dame is 3-point dogs at home, because Clemson, yes, better team, but they're not complete. USC, same thing. Great offense. But try and have that front seven step up and stop the run against a physical offensive line in Notre Dame. Good luck with that, because they couldn't stop Oregon State. They couldn't stop Tanner McKee in that offense last year for Stanford, right? That was still running at home as a 17.5-point dog on the road in the Coliseum. So that's the problem with USC, too. They can't stop anybody defensively. So that's why you're seeing the spread so tight compared to Ohio State, that is the most complete team and got a boost in the arm with Jim Knowles.
It'll be so fascinating to see what Notre Dame does from a depth perspective this year, because if there is concern, it is in that returning production, especially on the offensive side of the football and mainly at the most important position in all of the game, that being quarterback. Tyler Buckner, a sophomore, will battle it out with Drew Pine. We might see both of them log substantial minutes as the quarterback for the Irish this year, but none necessarily proven, Joe, as we get ready for 2022. Now, Notre Dame and Clemson is a fascinating comparison as well, because both struggled relatively to start the year, Clemson losing more football games than Notre Dame, but both struggled to cover numbers against weak competition. Of course, Notre Dame, a touchdown favorite the opening week against a bad FSU team. They only win by 3, not covering as a touchdown favorite. Against Toledo the following week at home as a 16.5-point favorite, Joe. Toledo had a lead late in that ball game, and Notre Dame only covered by, or only won by, a field goal, not covering as a 16.5-point favorite. Then they lose to Cincinnati that opening week of October, but then Notre Dame rallied off 7 straight wins, covering in all 7 of those games. 6 of the 7 booked as a favorite. 5 of those 6 booked as at least a touchdown favorite. But as I mentioned, returning production will be something to pay attention to all year long, not just for Notre Dame, but they only return 45% of their offensive production. That ranks 118th out of 131 college football teams at the FBS level. Not great, Lisi, especially when they play teams like BYU, who has the second most returning talent in the country, and Stanford, who has the third most returning production in all of college football. It will be interesting to see how that factors in to performance this season at the college football realm. We'll tie up the show on the other side of the break, up next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Closing out our hour together on this afternoon on a Monday, live on the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. I am Ben Stevens. He is Joe Lisi. We end Football Full Circle in just a couple of moments. But Joe, we've been tying what we're seeing in the NCAA baseball tournament, in the College World Series on the horizon this upcoming weekend. 6 of the 8 teams have booked their place in the Omaha 8, and one of those teams is Texas A&M. In fact, the Aggies were the first team to do so, beating Louisville in their Super Regional to advance to Omaha.
We got a great story today on Three Sports reporting that through an open record, some Texas A&M officials asked the SEC, following Nick Saban's comments about Jimbo Fisher and his recruiting purposes for his recruiting class, they asked the SEC, Joe, league office, to suspend Nick Saban. You guys are funny there in College Station. You guys got a good sense of humor.
Oh, Ben, we have to tune into this game. What is it, October 8th? Is
October 8th, Joe.
Yep, in Tuscaloosa, 16-point underdogs already. Is it Max Johnson? Is it Haynes King that comes back from an injury to win out the starting quarterback battle? What does Jimbo do? I mean, I would still take the 16 points. I really would take it. I hope it's a great game, just the way it was last year. But that is must-watch television, because if Alabama does get up by double digits, you know Nick isn't turning the engine off, right? He's gonna full throttle ahead, 58-0 if he could do it.
How could he turn the engine off, Joe, after all that has been said this offseason, after all that was said last offseason, and all that we saw on the actual football field with Alabama, an 18.5-point favorite last year in October on the road in College Station, and A&M wins outright. A 16-point spread in favor of the Tide in Tuscaloosa, Joe, which is only 117 days away. October 8th, 2022. He's Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. This has been a Monday on Football Full Circle on the Sports Grid Radio Network. Up next, it's a Monday on the Money Line with Donnie Wrightside and Kevin Walsh.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.